This is cannabis, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think it is. Second round knockout. His beef with LL Cool J.
Just got a thumbs up from Christopher Latta on the other side of the glass.
Yeah, LL came back with the Ripper Strikes Back.
There you go.
There you have it. Little random
I'm really bad with
rap trivia.
Music knowledge and trivia. Like, ask me what album a song is off of. 9 times out of 10, I have no idea.
No chance.
It could be a song I love, an artist I love. I'm just terrible at that stuff.
Let's see. Second round KO. When did that come out?
Ward said smells like it.
Nine, one more. 98, yes. Nice word. Good word. 1998. Yeah, I listened to that song probably 17 million times when I was in my teens. Anyway, let's get to De'Aaron Fox. Back to the Kings we go. You know, go back a couple weeks ago, Rami, and we were having this conversation about De'Aaron Fox turning it on in the fourth quarter. And whether or not at times that costs the team some games because he doesn't necessarily get going early. He doesn't push the tempo all the time, and he's not as aggressive early in the game as he is in the fourth quarter. And what really got us talking about it was Mike Brown. Mike Brown was talking to the media one night, this is several weeks ago, and he brought up the idea of, hey, De'Aaron just can't wait around until the fourth quarter to get it going. Here was Brown at the time.
Fox's ability as a two-way player can make him freaking elite. Like, elite, elite. He doesn't quite know it yet, though. He has a switch that he can turn on, and he usually turns it on in the fourth quarter when we need him to on both ends of the floor. Somehow, some way, I got to get him to turn it on for a little closer to the 34, 33, whatever minutes he's playing, instead of just waiting for the fourth quarter, because he's more than capable. That means be in tune with what your assignment, your job is from beginning to end to set the tone, especially at the beginning. He is a special player, and the stuff he does in the fourth quarter doesn't surprise me at all. Not at this point. I just need him to get to a point where he's doing it for most of the game.
I just need him to get to the point where he's doing it for most of the game. That's not me talking. It's not Rami talking. That's the coach. The coach several weeks ago saying, yeah, Fox and what he's done in the fourth quarter is fantastic, but we need more fourth quarter Fox in the first three quarters, because then maybe, hey, we'll build leads and we don't need a superhuman effort from De'Aaron every single night to win a game, right? That's the coach. Then there was this interview a week or two ago. I was trying to remember where it was. But I remember referencing that sound you just heard, because in the interview, Brown kind of does a 180. He says, oh, well, Fox has done a really good job picking his spots. So it was an inconsistent message. It wasn't a big deal. I didn't do an entire segment on it. But I think you were out that day, and I remember reading it from Brown and saying, well, there's a disconnect between what he just said in that interview print versus what he said several weeks ago about how De'Aaron's got to get it going more often. Which is it? Is he picking his spots at the right time, or do you want him to be super aggressive for more of the game than just the fourth? And I bring this up, Rami, because last night was the perfect example of what we're talking about. So De'Aaron got off to a slow start. He wasn't being super aggressive. Then all of a sudden in the second quarter, he kicked it into gear. And when you're sitting there at halftime, you got De'Aaron Fox with 20 points. 20 points, 2 rebounds, only 1 assist. But he was incredibly efficient, 7 of 9 from the field, 1 of 1 from 3, and he took 6 free throws in the first half. So you had the aggressive Fox, the Fox that was hunting for his offense. Then in the second half, he finished with 9 points. 9 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists. So a lot less points, many more assists. Here was Fox last night in the post game talking about his game and playing against the Timberwolves team.
Yeah, I mean that's a long team. They, you know, started to fill gaps more, didn't leave guys on an island. So, you know, I feel like the help defense was a lot better in the second half than it was in the first.
So he says, look, the first half I could get to where I wanted to go. Second half, not so much. Shot selection was a thing to me, Rami, in the second half at points for D-Fox. And I think it goes hand in hand with what he just said about the defense making it a little bit tougher. In the second half, Fox finished 3 of 11 from the floor. So he was 7 of 9 in the first half, 3 of 11 in the second half, and I do not think it's a coincidence that in the first half he took one single solitary three and made it. In the second half, he took 5 threes and missed all 5. Are you okay with these spurts? Can you survive with the spurts? Are you concerned about the spurts? How Fox doesn't necessarily give you every night, you know, 35 to 40 minutes of uber-aggressive basketball. He's got the ebbs and flows. Are you concerned by that?
Not so much. I'm okay with it, Nick, because I think sometimes we ask too much of our athletes or expect too much of athletes. I think if you look at it, man, there's only so much gas in the tank. And I guess I can't say nobody. Some guys have that motor, have that drive where for every 35, 40 minutes they're out on the floor, it looks like it's 100% max effort. Domas is one of those guys. But most guys, no matter the sport, like I remember Randy Moss used to get the bad rap of, oh, he takes plays off.
Yep.
Everybody takes plays off. Every single guy who steps onto a field probably takes plays off or steps onto a court. They're human beings, man. And to ask this guy to have his foot to the pedal for however many minutes he's out there for a game, 35 minutes last night, I don't think is realistic. Like if guys could do that, they'd be doing it. You know what I mean? Like De'Aaron Fox would be putting up 70 points a game.
Yeah.
If he could dial up fourth quarter Fox for all 35 minutes he was out there on the floor. No, man. Everybody has that sort. Either you're consistent for a stretch of games and then you peter out and you run out of gas, or you're like De'Aaron Fox where it's over the course of a game. You got to take your foot off the gas pedal a little bit, then put it down, pick it up, put it down. It's the nature of sports, not just basketball, of all sports, what we're seeing from De'Aaron Fox here.
Cattles and Rami, Sacktown Sports, and I agree with you. I mean, look, everybody has spurts. That's what it's all about, right? If somebody was going to be able to score 10 to 15 points a quarter, every night, you'd have guys averaging 40 to 50 points a game. Now, I'm sure some guys could do that if they wanted to. I'm sure some guys could just take 25, 30 shots a night and give you that average. But if you're actually managing the game responsibly, then you're going to play in spurts. And you're going to have moments where you score. You're going to string together some buckets. And then you might not have those moments where you're stringing buckets together. The other thing about De'Aaron that we have to keep in mind, and this isn't always the case with some of the star players in the NBA, you know, De'Aaron is asked to play both ends of the floor. He is asked to be a two-way player. And so when you ask your star to be better defensively, and to show more urgency and embrace that end of the floor, then inevitably he's going to have some possessions offensively where he's trying to reserve the gas tank a little bit. And, you know, you look at players, it's like Steph Curry. Steph Curry and what he accomplishes offensively is pretty unbelievable just based off of how much movement you see him have during a game. He's in constant motion for 40 minutes. Like, he doesn't stop. He's sprinting the entire that takes a tremendous amount of conditioning. When you see the Celtics and you watch Tatum and Brown, watch how many times those two guys set screens in a game. Not every star player is asked to consistently set screens because it's a physical thing, right? Tatum and Brown set screens. They play both ends of the floor. They play 37 minutes a night. They don't load manage hardly ever. Those guys play 75 games a year. That takes a lot out of you. For the Kings, you've got De'Aaron, who is trying, again, the higher pickup point to embrace the defense, to show some urgency in the backcourt. And then you have Domas, and you think about Domas's game and how at times he's going to have to conserve some energy because he's facilitating, he is setting screens, he's playing incredibly physical down in the paint. So it's impossible to ask a guy to do this his entire time while he's out there. And I would say the bigger problem, look, man, the bigger issue to me was that you needed the others to step up last night. Like, Fox helped you get a lead at halftime. Did he run out of gas late? Yeah, he ran out of gas late. But it wouldn't have been a big deal if Keegan or Herter were making shots the whole game Or, you know, if you made some free throws, all of those things we've talked about before. If you could grab a rebound, if you weren't so bad defensively in the fourth quarter, then we wouldn't be looking back and saying, man, you really needed De'Aaron in the fourth, because De'Aaron did a lot of the work in the first half.
And we talked earlier in the show, Nick, about how Keegan Murray and the others, Kevin Herter, Malik Monk, the rest of the supporting cast, they gave you hardly anything for the first three quarters. The only three players in double digits through three quarters were Domas, Fox, and Harrison Barnes. You needed De'Aaron Fox to carry you a little bit more through those first three quarters than he normally would, and maybe he sensed that. But also at the same time, I think you almost, I wouldn't say have to expect, but no, it's a possibility that you're running the risk that when De'Aaron Fox has to carry a heavier load for the first three quarters, maybe in the fourth quarter, that guy might not be there. The guy who's about to be the Jerry West clutch performer of the year.
And also, let's not overlook this. And it's obviously not a jab at Fox. It's just how he is physically built. He's not the biggest dude in the world, right? He's supremely athletic. He's got good length. And, you know, he's just mind-boggling quick with his speed on the floor. But he's not the biggest dude. He tried to put 10 pounds on last year, muscle. It backfired. He wasn't the same guy. He had to then go back and lose the weight.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're playing 36, 37 minutes a night and you're not the biggest dude, you're somewhat slight, then that's also going to, you know, weigh on you.
His game has reminded me of Derrick Rose. I've brought up that comparison throughout the season, Nick. And Allen says, when asking for 100% all the time, I think I go back to prime D Rose. 100% all the time, then got hurt. It was just too much usage all the time. Mm. I don't know. And I think there is something to that. I think there is absolutely something to that.
All right, your thoughts on Foxy's game last night? Really good first half. Seemed like he petered out in the second half. Are you concerned about these spurts? Are you concerned about, hey, he's either great in the first half or he's just great in the second half? He doesn't really put it together all the time. Neither Rami nor I am too concerned about it. Just kind of the facts of life in the NBA. I'll get to your reaction. Also, Cam Salerno joins us to talk Kings in 90 seconds.
Cattles
and Rami.
Sacktown Sports.
All right, we'll get back to your Kings thoughts in a little bit. But first, we are joined on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop, by our friend Cam Salerno from 24/7 Sports. Cam, thanks. We appreciate the time as always. What does the clinching moment mean to you as someone who has followed this team his entire life when this inevitably happens?
Well, you know, I think everyone thought it might happen on Sunday. You know, everyone thought it could happen the day before on Saturday if, you know, different scenarios went right. But, you know, it obviously didn't happen last night, where I think it was kind of like that Disney moment where, you know, everyone thought they were going to clinch last night in front of the home crowd. Everyone was there. I mean, tickets were getting expensive. I mean, everyone – and when you walked in the arena last night, I think you felt that it could be the night. But to answer your question, Nick, I think it'd mean a lot to everyone in the city because, obviously, like you said, I've grown up in Sacramento my entire life. I've lived here. I've probably the first professional sports team I watched growing up was the Kings, and I don't really remember when they were good. I mean, I think the last time they were in the playoffs, I was about 6 years old. And so I think for me personally, I think it'd mean a lot because I think it just would be cool for the city to have something to root for. And, I mean, I've seen my fair share of good – sporting events and moments in my life, but I think just to know it means a lot more just because it is Sacramento. And I think more context too is the Kings were going to move 10 so years ago to either Seattle or Anaheim, and the city really rallied together and saved the team. So I think just, you know, when you put everything kind of together and just how the season's gone, I think it would mean a lot, but it's not going to be that perfect moment like everyone thought it would where they clinch at home.
Harrison Barnes had said something after the game last night about, and I'm paraphrasing, not wanting to think the season's over when they've clinched a playoff spot, and to sort of keep your eyes on the prize. As a fan, as somebody who covers this team, playoffs, that might have been the goal to start the season, but sights on bigger things now, right?
Well, honestly, I'd even back you up to say I think people would be happy with a play-in spot coming into the season. I mean, sure. Everyone thought, you know, if they get 40 wins, that'd be the goal. I mean, I think, and, you know, if you look at how the West has been the last few years, I mean, the West has been better than the East, and I think this is kind of the year where things have really started to shift where the East is pretty much better. I mean, you can make an argument that you know, the third or fourth best team in the East would be probably the best team in the West outside the Nuggets. And so I would say, to answer your question, that I don't know. I think the Kings' goals have gotten bigger throughout the season. I mean, I think when you look at it, how the season's gone, where they've jumped up the standings and they went from a team that was a play-in contender to now, okay, they're probably going to be a playoff team, to now they're a top three seed in the West. And so I think the expectation is you win a first-round playoff series no matter who you face. And that could be the Warriors, that could be the Clippers, that could be the Timberwolves. And I think no matter who they play in the first round, it's going to be a really tough matchup. There's no cakewalks in the NBA, as you guys both know. But I think, you know, when you look back at the season in a few months or whenever it ends, I think you can deem the season a success no matter how it goes, even if they do lose in the first round just because of expectations coming in. And I think expectations have obviously risen throughout the season, like I said, because they went from a team that was a play-in team to now a team that's third in the West and is going to host a first-round playoff series or have that home court advantage. And so I would say, you know, definitely expectations have gotten larger, but I hope fans at the end of the season kind of, you know, look back and say, no matter what happens, it was a really successful year. And obviously, this team is pretty young, and they can still make future playoff runs, and we don't know what's going to happen in the offseason if they're going to go out and re-sign Harrison Barnes or look to upgrade from that position. So I think at the end of the day, I think Kings fans should keep in perspective that, yes, no matter what happens, this is a good year. But also, it's kind of the expectation where they, you know, do win a playoff series in some people's eyes because they are going to be favored as a number three seed in the West or wherever they end up. So I think I'm kind of mixed as far as, you know, if they lose in the first round, would it be disappointing for a lot of people? I think so, just because the expectations have risen. But like I said, they were not really supposed to be here at the start of the season. So if they do make it out of the first round and even make a little run, I think fans should be more than satisfied.
Cam Salerno is with us here, Cattles and Rami, on this Tuesday, Sactown Sports. Cam, are the Wolves just a bad matchup for the Kings?
I think the Wolves would be a terrible matchup for the Kings just because they, I mean, Jay McDaniels on De'Aaron Fox, I mean, Fox was getting his in the first half, but, I mean, they didn't even have Karl Anthony Towns to, I mean, make the argument who the best player on that team is with Ant or Cat. I mean, Ant is a superstar. I mean, he didn't even have a good game last night, and they still won. I mean, Rudy Gobert is, you know, I have my mixed opinions on Rudy just as far as how the trade went. And, you know, personally, if I were Utah, I'd be very satisfied with how that trade went just because of all the first-round picks they got. And also, too, Walker Kessler is looking like, you know, he's going to be a really, really good player in this league. I mean, he had 31 points against Sacramento earlier last week. And so I think they are a bad matchup just because of size-wise. I mean, the Timberwolves can shoot the ball, and the Kings have been really kind of bad at defensive rotations in that first matchup against the Timberwolves in Sacramento. I mean, they got a bunch of open threes. Not as much last night, but at the end of the day, I mean, the Kings defense isn't going to be great, and the way they're going to win games is they're going to outscore teams just because they have a historically good offense. So I would say the Wolves would be a bad matchup, but like I said, no matter who they play, it's going to be a really tough matchup. If it's the Warriors or it's the Timberwolves or one of the teams like the Lakers and the Pelicans slide up to six. So I think no matter who they play, it's going to be a tough matchup. But honestly, like I was going back and forth today, I think Timberwolves would probably be a tougher matchup than the Warriors at this point.
Is there a favorite matchup that you see out there that you like?
Ooh, I mean, if you would ask me probably a week or two ago, I would say Mavs, just because I think they can beat them and I think they can outscore them. And, you know, obviously, I think the difference is, you know, when you look at teams like the Warriors, I mean, they have so much playoff experience. I mean, Steph is Steph, and they've been there before a million times. And I think I saw something that, like, they haven't lost to a Western Conference team, I forget what the exact stat was, but they're so-and-so against Western Conference teams, like, in the playoffs. And so that's a tough matchup just because of the championship pedigree that they have. The Timberwolves is a bad matchup because, you know, they are just looking really sharp right now. I mean, obviously they have Ant and Rudy and Cat when he's back, and they have good defense. But, I mean, obviously, you know, who knows who's going to jump as far as, you know, are the Lakers or the Pelicans going to make a jump to six? I mean, it's honestly crazy. I've never seen anything like this as far as, you know, hanging to the last few weeks of the season, like six places separated by like two games in 11th place. So, I mean, the Mavericks could jump up, which, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but there is going to be a team or two doesn't make the playoffs or even the play-in. I think that's going to be disappointing to a lot of fans. And so who knows who that's going to be, but I would say Mavericks, but I don't know if they're going to make that jump because they're not playing good right now at all.
Cam, we appreciate the time as always, my man. Let's do it again soon. Be well.
Yes, sir. Talk to him.
There goes Cam Salerno from 24/7 Sports. Of course, Cam was on the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Yeah, I mean, look, you look at some of these teams, the Timberwolves, we'll talk about them a little later in the show and whether or not we think that they're just an incredibly tough matchup for the Kings. But I think any team that is ranked below you, that is standing, you know, a couple games behind you to five or six games behind you, there's a reason for concern with all of those teams if they're healthy. I mean, you could argue the Suns are just really tough with KD, right, as he comes back tomorrow
night.
That's
still the team that's – I mean, I know we've barely seen it, the KD Suns, but that's still the team that scares me the most, man.
Nothing is going to be an easy out is the point. No. And you're not going to be an easy out either. So that's just the way the Western Conference is this year. It's wide open, man. Like, it's wide open.
I like it.
It's going to be completely unpredictable. I don't know who's going to represent the West this year. There's that level of who knows.
You do have Maclough Magic on your side, Sacramento.
You do.
So there's that.
Taos, soap all in right. Maclough Magic.
Yes. How about Dame Dalla in Sacramento?
Ooh.
Feeling it or fraudulent? Hey. It's next.
Is it really real or is it fake? Truth or Fugazi? It's time to find out. Is feeling it or fraudulent?
All right, so feeling it or fraudulent, we're going to talk about Dame Dalla today. Good old Dame Dalla. Portland's cooked. Dame is going to be sitting the rest of the year, according to Chris Haynes. Shams had this a little bit earlier as well. Really a wasted season for Dame. But it is what it is when you're a trailblazer. So what do you got for us today, JJ?
Yes, sir, fellas. I am talking Dame Dalla, who should have been the Sacramento King anyway. We know that from the jump. You guys weren't privy to this information, but I know you guys have been up on your game plan since coming to Sacramento. He was a Sacramento King, man. He was a Sacramento King. He was going to be a Sacramento King.
Yep.
I'm not even going to throw the other man's name under the bus. You know who the Kings wound up picking. We'll just say he didn't wind
That's
up
That's not fair to
out.
Him. He didn't ask for that, Jay.
Very true.
Right.
All this type of pressure that was mounted on his back. But with that being said, fellas, Nick, you just spoke about Dame and the Portland Trailblazers basically being out of the playoffs almost mathematically. Dame had a little bit of conversation post-game a few days ago about what he's not feeling up in Portland.
I think anytime you see growth and you see stuff that can contribute towards winning attitude and winning behavior and winning things, you accept it. You know, you love to see that from guys. And I think that definitely is something that you got to continue to encourage and continue to build upon as we continue to work towards next season and things like that. But for me, that's not what I'm interested in. So that's the frustrating part of it is talking about, for what's going to happen next season and us building, like that's not what I'm here to do, especially at this stage in my career. So as much as it is encouraging to promote that brand of basketball that you probably win with going forward, and that's what we got to learn to make a habit of. I mean, right now I'm not out there looking like, okay, we making these plays. This is what we got to start doing for next. You know, it's hard for me to remove myself from the present as far as that, and then go forward about being excited about what we doing that we can do going forward.
Well, fellas, doesn't sound like Dame wants to move forward. We know he's been super, super loyal to Portland. Him and Bradley Beal have been the two guys, two superstars, athletes, all-stars, whatever you want to call them, that has been loyal to their team. Feeling it or fraudulent? Mr. Maclough, we'll start with you since you're back. You're the guest. Feeling it or fraudulent? Dame being a part of the Sacramento Kings next year, as you just heard Dame said, he doesn't want to rebuild.
Feeling it. Feeling it. If you can get Dame Dalla in a Kings uniform. And I don't know how far I'd go, Nick, JJ, but I'd go pretty far in terms of the price I'd pay to get Dame into to Sacramento. First round pick for sure. If they asked for, I don't know, a Kevin Huerter, yeah, take Kevin Huerter. Give us Dame Dollar. I'd pay a heavy price.
Kevin Huerter.
To get Damian Lillard to Sacramento. Absolutely feeling it. No doubt about it.
All right, so I attack this a little bit differently. I'm going to go fraudulent because really? I don't see it happening. I don't think it's possible. Look, he's going to make $45 million next year. Who are you going to trade to Portland that's going to make up that money? You've got to make up that money somehow. So are you going to trade Huerter? Okay, fine. But you can't just trade Huerter.
Davion Mitchell? He's still on a rookie contract. That's not going to get you much back.
I mean, it also depends on if you want to bring back Harrison Barnes. If you want to bring back Harrison
There's
Barnes.
There's some money off the books.
But yeah, so it. But you can't. I don't want to glaze people's eyes over. There's a lot of details here, a lot of minutiae. It'd be very difficult to. You could sign Barnes, and then you'd have to match the money with other players that, you know, would equal to the $45 million. So Barnes's money would not be part of that trade going out. So I don't think you have the contracts to match. Like, and look, even if you think
you have to be practical about this.
I know, I'm sorry. But even if you like the idea of matching contracts, let's remember, there's another team. There's another team in this trade. Like, yeah, could you trade Huerter and Rashawn Holmes's money and some other money?
They're rebuilding. They're going to want either young pieces or draft picks.
It'll cost you Keegan. It'll cost you probably money-wise one of Fox or Domas. It's not worth it. On top of that,
I'll start with Keegan and Kevin.
We have to remember that the Huerter trade really cripples the Kings in these conversations because the Huerter piece going back is a first round pick protected like top 14 this year. Then in future years, the protections get a little bit less.
And then if they don't vest,
then it's 2 second round picks. So you'd have to go back to Atlanta, rework that trade, give them the first round pick this year. Atlanta would probably say, we don't want your first round pick this year. You're going to be a top 3 seed in the Western Conference. But no, that's not going to happen. Let's see if you can continue this momentum because we might want to bank on you being not as good next year or 2 years from now. So the picks are held hostage by the Huerter situation. You don't have much young talent aside from Keegan. I mean, Davion, but Davion and Keegan is not going to get you Dame Lillard. Like, they're going to want, Portland's going to want young players and a bunch of picks. Look at the Rudy Gobert trade. Look at the Donovan Mitchell trade. Look at all of these trades for these superstars.
Yeah, but no, I mean,
that's what they're going to want in return.
Nobody has gone the lengths that Minnesota went to get. I think a lot of people, myself included, thought the market was reset with the Rudy Gobert trade. I think that was a one-off. I think that was the exception and not the rule. And if anything, it reset the market in the sense that owners and front offices went, whoa, 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 what are we doing here? What are we giving up for a Rudy Gobert?
Right.
And what does that make a Dame Lillard worth if you're giving that up for a Rudy Gobert? I think the market settled a little bit after the Rudy Gobert trade and some people came to their senses in front offices around this league.
Here are some more reasons, basketball reasons, why I wouldn't be completely sold on this Dame-Dollar relationship. First of all, his contract is going to get even worse as he gets older. He's going to make like $60 million when he's like 35, 36 years old. So what you're telling everybody is this is the window. And again, how much are you giving up? How much are you giving up to get Dame back? Will you have a team that you feel is complete enough to win a championship in the next year or two? Because you're not banking on Dame Dalla at 34, 35 years old making tons of money. You're going to be in a tough situation even with the cap moving up. So I would ask that question. I would also, look, Dame's awful defensively. Would Mike Brown even enjoy the idea of having Dame Dalla in your backcourt? Because he's a complete zero defensively. And if you had some concerns, and I know somebody brought this up in the chat, Brian Wells brought it up, like, Halley and Fox didn't work. Would Dame and Fox work? Would Dame be willing to allow Domas to facilitate the offense like Fox does? How much does it change your offense? How much ISO are you looking at? There's a lot of your backcourt's really small. There's a lot of questions about Dame, you know, being the piece.
All that crossed my mind. Not the salary stuff and all that.
And real quick, Dame never makes $60 million. He makes 48 at the top.
No. Nope. Totally wrong.
For me, 48.
Last year he makes 48. It's 50 against the cap.
While you look at that, what calms my concerns about any basketball questions I might have, Nick, all those ones you threw out there, is Mike Brown. I have faith in Mike Brown.
So JJ is looking at his current contract. He signed a contract that gave him an extra 2 years.
And he has the buyout on it. He's never going to see the end of that.
No, there's an S.
He's going to opt out.
I've got to make it clear. It's not an opt. It's not an option. Not an option. He already exercised the option for 24-25. He did that to sign the contract. That was the extension. Because he had to do it because there were still so many years left on his contract. But Portland was like, we're going to go ham anyway. He's set to make, it's an estimate because of the salary cap, but in 25-26 at the age of 35, he's set to make $58.5 million. It's an estimate. It could be up to 60 depending on how much the cap goes up in the TV deals. Then in 26-27 at the age of 36, he has a player option for $63
million. He's not going to see it.
I don't think he... Hey, look, I can't predict it, but if I'm 36 years old and I have $63 million sitting there for me, I doubt I'm going to turn that option down. I'm going to be like, oh, you're going to pay me $60 million to be 36 years old? Unless he ages like LeBron, which, again, I don't think any of us can predict.
The way he's talking, he might retire.
Yeah. I mean,
Which, by the way,
if he doesn't get traded to a place that he wants to be,
wasn't he just saying a couple of weeks ago, like, this is, I'm not a ring chaser. I love it here. My family loves it here. This is where I want to be. His tune changed really fast. And he has that right to change his tune. I understand it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm not going to blame anything.
No,
that he says, because he's been so, him and Bradley Beal, like, to me, they have the right to do whatever they want at this point. Like,
for sure.
If I was those guys, I'd be like, get me out.
I'm surprised. I wasn't saying that in a negative way. I'm just surprised that, that Dame this quickly changed his tune.
But again, in the big picture, it hasn't been too quickly, right?
True. True. Yeah.
Maybe he was I was watching. I mentioned this, I think, a week ago or so. I was watching Portland and the Celtics play, and they had a camera shot extended on Dame on the bench. And Dame just looked just distraught. Like, he looked like a dude who was rethinking some decisions he's made. Like, maybe this isn't the place now for me to be. Maybe it's officially time for me to walk and or ask to be gone. And so, hey. But if he wants to stay there, I've said this before. If he wants to stay there, all power to him. Mike Trout wanted to stay with the Angels. I don't feel bad for Mike Trout. Those guys wanted to stay. So, but again, that contract is massive, and I don't know if he's going to help you in some of the categories you need help. You might be better just staying the course here and seeing if Keegan can develop into that three guy. Mm. And you have some money in free agency this year. You can add another piece. Not a star piece like Dame. But anyway, there you go. Feeling it or fraudulent. Little Damian Lillard. Let me see. I owe JJ something here. Yes. 340. No, 340 on a Tuesday.
Little clinic action.
Time to check out Coastside Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough remedies for men. We've got some of your Kings reaction we still have to get to. Also, some 49ers notes and more coming up. Got some 49ers notes for you. Also, some Kings reaction. King's reaction, YouTube. Am I dropped? Does Fox need load management? Is the hamstring bothering him, Rami?
Maybe. I'm not a doctor. I don't see him on a day-to-day basis. Maybe.
I don't think he would be out there if he was bothered by this hamstring. I mean, the team knows that they're in really solid footing with the playoffs right now. I don't think you would have any kind of unnecessary risk playing Fox unless he went through all of the necessary pregame workouts and precautions and passed.
You would think. Okay. Yeah.
And, I mean, he also played – how many minutes did he play last night?
35.
35? Yeah, I don't think you're playing 35 minutes if there's a problem with the hammy. I think he has to feel pretty good to not only play but play 35 minutes. More reaction, YouTube. My only question is, what happened to confident Fox? Because we were talking about De'Aaron Fox earlier in the hour, this idea of, like, you know, Coach Brown has come out before during this season and said that he'd like to see a more aggressive Fox earlier on in the game versus just the fourth quarter. And we got that last night in the second quarter. We got, you know, fourth quarter Fox in the second, and then fourth quarter Fox didn't actually happen last night because it looked like he ran out of a little bit of gas. And Scooter 916 says, only question is what happened to confident Fox, who could get any shot at any time he wanted. I don't recall what game it was after the Brown interview, but he ran out of gas doing it all game. Well, yeah, I mean, look, he can get any shot that he wants, any time he wants, but he is also not a robot, and he's going to, at times, feel things physically. He's going to feel a little drained at times if he's going, you know, pedal to the metal on both ends of the floor in the first half, for example. Then, you know, in the fourth quarter, he might not be as aggressive or as juiced up to be out there flying around. So he usually can get any shot that he wants. But look, there are also different matchups that play a role as well.
For sure.
Like you can't just destroy everybody. They will eventually switch somebody on you, and sometimes those switches work. Mike Shamhart says he thinks they should rest Fox versus Portland either for the first or second game. We'll see if they do those games. We'll talk more about those tomorrow, but those games pretty important against Portland. When you look at the big picture, when you look at the schedule after the back-to-back against Portland on the Wednesday and Friday in Portland this week, you've got some tough games after that.
Also, I still got my sights set on 50. Let's not ease up.
I brought it up yesterday. They needed to go, 5-3? Now it's
5-2 now.
Now they got to go 5-2.
Close out the season. Yep.
To hit that 50 number. Some quick Niners notes before we get back to the Kings. Zane Gonzalez is your new kicker.
There you go.
Bang, bang, Niners.
That might be the first time we played a drop for a kicker. But you swapped picks in 2025, so it didn't cost you much. He missed all of last year with a groin. Ouch. Ouch, my groin. In 2021, though, Rami, he did make 20 of 22 field goals. So looks like Zane Gonzalez will be your guy unless you draft a kicker. I don't think you trade picks,
nah,
swap picks if you're
probably
not gonna,
your guy.
Yeah. I mean, you might go with an undrafted free agent for some competition, but I don't know if you'd use a pick.
I know, you know, we ridicule kickers. We don't take them seriously as football players. I really think letting Robbie Gould walk might be something that the 49ers end up regretting. Maybe this. I mean, you said he was what, 20 of 22?
Dude, did
last
not,
healthy season
yeah,
he had.
Gould did not. He did not miss a kick in the postseason.
That's what I'm saying. Oof. He's literally the greatest postseason kicker ever. When just on the numbers.
Yeah,
I'm going just on the numbers. I know you have Adam Vinatieri.
Yeah, I mean,
he's your guy. I understand.
Well, he's not just my guy. He made Super Bowl winning kicks like it was nothing.
He's the GOAT, Rami.
I understand. Okay, I'm not going to have this argument about who's the GOAT kicker.
I feel like you besmirch my opinion when you go, I know he's your guy.
He's your guy. I understand that.
I mean, as if unequivocally he wasn't incredible for like 20 years.
Literally, but Robbie Gould has literally never missed a playoff field goal.
Yes.
Close games come down to kickers, man. I don't think you necessarily want to sell that position short or go cheap on it and just let Robbie Gould walk into free agency.
I mean, would you rather have or rather not have Justin Tucker, for example, you know, when you're
right,
looking to win a game with a 60-yard field goal? You'd rather have that guy than somebody else.
Yes.
Also, Brandon Ayuk's 50-year option was picked up. This was really not too much of a surprise. It's pretty much just paperwork, but his 50-year option gets picked up. I do, though, wonder, not this year, because the money doesn't work. JJ helped us out with that weeks ago about the Debo stuff and the contract and dead money, but because you picked up Ayuk's 50-year option, I do think it absolutely opens the door to a Debo trade after this season, because the money drops precipitously on the books and you have Ayuk as your number one. You work in an extension out with him, and maybe you trade Debo for, I don't know what you can get, first round pick, second round pick, and you move on. So I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if the Ayuk 50-year option is the first step towards an eventual Debo trade down the road. Not right now. But
I think it would,
eventually.
It would cost him something like $27, $28 million if they traded him this offseason.
That ain't going to happen. Yeah.
But maybe next year.
I've had people, I do a podcast with Greg Bedard. I've had Patriots people reach out, be like, they're going to trade for Debo. I'm like, no, they're not. It'd be a terrible move for San Francisco. That makes no sense for them financially. It's not happening.
There you go again.
Move
Being
on.
Practical.
From, move on.
On the parade.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry I give you reality.
You're a mean one, yeah. Mr. Grinch.
I know. Might want to move on from that delusion, New England fans. Not this year.
Delusion is fun, man. Be a little delusional sometimes.
Meanwhile, yeah. Rami, the Washington Commanders sales process continues. Magic Johnson is part of a group that's bid $6 billion, reportedly. There's a Canadian billionaire who has a $6 billion-plus offer on the table for Daniel Snyder. And Mike McDaniel, now the head coach of the Dolphins, as you know, and he obviously coached with Shanahan in San Francisco as well for a little bit there as run game coordinator. He spent some time in the Washington organization. So here was his reaction at the owners' meetings this week when he found out that they're about to be sold for $6 billion with a B dollars.
Wow, the organization's worth that much? And, you know, I couldn't get free coffee?
He's got great delivery, man.
He does.
His comedic delivery is outstanding. But he's right, man.
$6 billion and I couldn't get a cup of coffee.
I don't understand how any corporation is necessarily valued when you see these huge sales and mergers and stuff. But how do you buy a company, run it literally criminally bad, make it worse in every way than it was from the day you bought it, and sell it for like 800% of what you bought? How does business work? How does money work when you get to that level? How do I fail up like that is what I want to know,
Look, Daniel Snyder has to thank every single other owner in the NFL for doing really good work. He also has to thank a guy who has a very thankless job, and I'm going to be incredibly unpopular for saying this, but he also owes a lot to Roger Goodell.
Sure.
Because we could sit there and talk about Roger all we want. That dude does a great job of taking bullets for owners. And he has worked on these TV deals with Robert Kraft and some of the other big-name owners. I think John Mara sometimes is also involved in that situation. But that's how. It's the value of the NFL that pushes the value of these teams. And so Snyder can be a complete disaster, which he is.
Which he is.
In many different ways, and still earn billions of dollars.
I need to find my avenue where I fail my way up like that, Nick Cattles.
I hate to break it to you, but the easiest way...
Uh-huh.
Is if you had a white old dad.
Damn it.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. You can call Stephen Jones.
To adopt me?
Adopt you, maybe. Nepotism's a hell of a thing. Nepotism is a hell of a thing.
Damn it.
Yeah, you're brown, so.
Man.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Your dad's not a billionaire, right?
Not that I know of.
Well.
Unless he's hiding oil money.
I'm not going to.
Get free coffee?
What I'm going to say right now is, would the T-Wolves be a problem for the Kings in a playoff matchup? That's next.
Cattles.
And Rami.
Sacktown Sports.